what that means. People are being murdered. They're being slain. They're being terrorized right now as we speak in the field on a smoky October night at Pinhead's graveyard. I feel so sorry for the people out there tonight. Otis is the madman behind it all. Otis, are you with us, sir?
Yes, I'm here, Josh. I'm getting ready to kill this last little girl. We just had a group go through, and I got me about three of them, so it's been a good night.
You're so evil, Otis. I can hear the enjoyment. You're relishing this experience, aren't you?
We love killing people. We really do. It makes all the summer months where you're hot and you don't want to do anything, and then you come down here in the fall and it's cold, and these people come down here and they're wanting to be scared, but they really don't know they're going to die, and it's just a perfect October.
Well, you know, I have told folks, in fact, last week on the show, I said, I've never been to Pinheads because it's the one place that's even too scary for me. But I will tell you this, Otis, if I ever go to Pinhead's graveyard, I'm not going to tell you I'm coming.
No,
because yeah, I know that you'll
be fair.
No, you'll go overboard for me, won't you?
Yes, I will.
Yeah, and I don't want that. I'm going to put on like a mustache or something, and if just slip right in there. Forrest, you've been to Pinhead's graveyard.
You sent me to Pinhead's graveyard. Scared the hell out of me.
So, and this year, Pinhead's graveyard is in a new location that's bigger and scarier than ever. Isn't that right, Otis?
Yes, we're no longer behind the Waffle House. We got home out here in between Candler and Canton. And we've actually been out here. This is our third year out here. But it is as if we've got a new location with everything we've done to the trail. It really is a different experience this year from years past.
And now, when people go there and they see Freddy Krueger and Jason and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and all these people, they just run screaming, don't they? Listen to this in the background. I mean,
I think Victor Crowley just got him on. Sorry, I'm back.
How quickly do people make it through, typically, a Pinhead's graveyard?
Average time is 20-25 minutes.
Oh.
But we have a lot of people that run through, and then we have a lot of people who are kind of messed up like us and take their time and enjoy it. So,
see, to me, it seems to me that 20-30 minutes of that would seem like hours. It would just never end. It would just go on and on. How did Pinhead's graveyard begin? Because this was your brainchild, wasn't it?
Yes, Joshua, it was. Back whenever I was a little serial killer, I was working around the area at other haunted houses, and for some reason just came up with the idea one day of hey, let's why don't we do one? And actually, the first year of Pinhead's Graveyard, we did it indoors. We were at the old Cowboys Nightlife out in Oteen, and it was fun. But we decided the next year that we should do something different and take it outside. So we actually found the little infamous stretch of the Zadia Road over in East Asheville, and we kind of set up shop there, and we were there for about 7 years and kind of built our fan base, per se. You know, this was before we had all the Facebook and the internet and everything like that. You know, a lot of that was kind of coming into play. This is our 17th year doing it. So we would go hand out flyers and try to get the word out. And it's so funny because kind of like in life, you know, we're always the kind of the older things were always the best, you know, as you remember them as you get older. And we'll still run into people, even though the trail we have now is 20-25 minutes, and our very first trail maybe took 10 or 15, and we only had the major movie characters and barely anything out there. We still run into people that remembers that being the best Pinhead's graveyard ever. So it's kind of like a little, you know, a little, I wouldn't say myth, but something that people always remember back on, like, oh yeah, I remember whenever they were on Azalea Road. So that's always neat hearing those stories.
then it seems so much scarier that you guys are just out there in this big open space with woods around you, and anything could be creeping out of those woods. I mean, at least when there's a haunted house, you can control access, but I know that you have an idea, a general idea of what's supposed to take place in those woods, but there may be things in those woods that even you don't know about.
Yes, yes. And we are actually on the base of a mountain. I believe there's probably 400 or 500 acres above us, and we are just on the very base of it. So between me and the top of this mountain, it's a 30-minute ride up to the top, and there's no telling what is up above us, Joshua. It is very creepy. So,
and as if it weren't scary enough, you once again have invited the real Leatherface to come back this year, haven't you?
Yes. Hey, cut her out, Michael! Sorry about that. We have. We are bringing back R.A. Mihailov, who played Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. And last year was our first year bringing in a horror icon, a celebrity at the graveyard. And what happened was he came in, Halloween fell on a Wednesday, and it got really bitter cold, and we had bad weather and rain, and he came out, and we had a good turnout, but it was just that middle of the week, Wednesday, you know, no one wanted to get out or anything like that. So I talked to R.A., and I told him, asked him if he would come back, and he said that he gave us first pick of the litter on what weekend we wanted him to come. So I picked the weekend before Halloween. It's the Thursday through Sunday, October 24th through the 27th. And he's coming back down here, and the response that we are getting is just tremendous. So.
Yeah, well, you know, last year, of course, he was on the program, and he seems like a really nice guy, but he's got to be intimidating to stand next to, huh?
Oh, yeah, he is. He's all of about 6'4" and probably weighs 300 pounds, and he's a very intimidating guy, almost like one of the biker guys that you would see that you wouldn't want to go mess with.
Now, I know last year he seemed a bit hesitant when I asked him if he were going to don the Texas Chainsaw Massacre mask. Did he ever do that?
No, he didn't, and I found out a little bit more behind that, because we would love for him to put on a costume. We got him to walk through the graveyard one night. But what it is, it's licensing issues in Hollywood and union stuff, and he cannot portray any character outside of for film or video or anything like that. So he didn't want to get in trouble. So that's kind of once I got to know him, he explained it a little bit more to me. So that's kind of why he shies away from that stuff. I know he would love to do it, but just, you know, technically he can't really, he really can't.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that makes sense. I know how that kind of stuff works.
Yeah.
So now, how many characters do you have there at Pinhead's Graveyard?
We have actually this year grown exponentially from years prior. Normally every few years, you know, we would add one character here, one character there. This year we've got the Cenobite. We got Pinhead. It's his graveyard. We got to keep him happy. But we've got the Cenobites, Butterball and Chatterer. And then of course everyone's favorite, Michael Myers. And then I am here as always. I love, trying to get a new, bunny rabbit as a victim. I killed mine. I actually got her skeleton hanging up on my tree, and she's rotting. So I'm getting new ones every night, but they just rot too fast, Joshua. If you can figure out a solution for that, I would love to figure it out. But, and another person that knew came down to the graveyard this year is Victor Crowley. And a lot of people do not know that name, but Kane Hodder portrayed Victor Crowley in Adam Green's trilogy, Hatchet movie. And it was kind of an homage to the old slasher flicks, to where Victor Crowley is just this monster, this horror slasher, and he would kill anybody the way he could, and there was just gallons of blood flying everywhere. So Victor Crowley is down here. with us this year, and we are very excited about that. So,
you know, I would be really honored if I were Clive Barker to know what you have created there. Have you ever heard from Clive Barker?
No, I haven't. So I haven't. You know, part of me wonders, you know, if he would like it or not. I'm sure he would, but I have not talked to Clive. I was talking to Gunnar Hansen, the original Leatherface, and telling him what we were doing. I was with RA at a horror convention, and we were in Charlotte, and Gunnar was there, you know, and Gunnar was like, hey, if you ever want to get Doug Bradley out there who played Pinhead, you know, just shoot me an email, and I can get him out there and really get friends with him. So I've kind of toyed with that idea of possibly bringing him down one year. So.
Wow. So now, we've only got a few minutes here till our break, so let me first off just ask you once again, how can people find Pinhead's Graveyard, and what would you like to tell people who are foolish enough to put themselves in this vulnerable position?
Oh, we love having victims. You guys come out, the more the merrier, the more blood we can have the better. Pinheadsgraveyard.com. Also, for up-to-the-minute stuff is Facebook. .com/Pinhead's Graveyard. That's got directions, calendar. We're open every night from now through Saturday, November 2nd, about 8 to 10 p.m., Sunday through Thursday, and on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, 8 p.m. to midnight. So the website's out there. We're right in between Canton and Candler. It's Interstate 40 to exit 37. There's a truck stop there. And you can join up with Highway 1923 there, and actually the address for the GPS is 2099 Asheville Highway, Canton, North Carolina, 28716. But it's real easy if you're on Smoky Park Highway, even if you're on Patton Avenue and you start downtown, Patton Avenue, and you drive it west, you're going to run into Smoky Park, and then it's going to turn into Asheville Highway, and you're going to see us on your left. We've got a big sign out there with lights, and it says Pinhead's Graveyard. So it's pretty easy to find. It's not off the beaten path, even though you feel like you are. So.
Yeah, and that's pinheadsgraveyard.com. We'll also have it linked up at speakingofstrange.com. You know, I feel like that after 17 years, Pinhead's Graveyard is a treasure of this area. It's a regional treasure. I mean, the media gives you guys glowing reviews, because they love being scared half to death. So all I can say is, keep up the good work, Otis. Excellent job. And maybe this will be the year I finally get the guts to slip out there in disguise one night and wet myself.
Normally, whenever we know someone's in the group, word spreads really fast. And I'm one of the first people you get to, so I'm going to be looking for you, Joshua.
Oh, great. That's wonderful.
Real quick, I know you got to go to a break. We've got the newspaper came out and shot a wonderful video last Thursday night. It's on the website. If anyone wants to know kind of what Pinhead's Graveyard is, go out to the website. It's actually out on YouTube under Pinhead's Graveyard, and check the video out. It really, they really did an amazing job, and I think after everyone watches that video, they're going to want to come out.
Well, you're right, because I watched that video, and it's very creepy. So, all right, Otis, I'll let you get back to your work terrifying and terrorizing the region. Happy Halloween to you, my friend.
Happy Halloween, Joshua, and I look forward to seeing you out there. I'm going to run down here and try to get me a couple more, and I'll even save you one, buddy, so come on out.
Oh, that sounds fun. All right, there you go, folks. Otis from Pinhead's Graveyard. Do you have what it takes? I mean, just go to pinheadsgraveyard.com and watch this video and then make up your mind. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Mr. Mobius, and he has some interesting updates and a great discussion about real paranormal phenomena that's happening here in October. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Ashes for trees, hot air for a cool breeze, cold cover for change. Did you exchange?
desolate depths of a perilous place. The boogeyman lurks with a snarl on his face. Never, never dare to approach his dark lair. For he's waiting, just waiting to get you. He skulks in the shadows, relentless and wild, in his search for a tender, delectable child. With his steely, sharp claws and his slavering jaws, oh, he's waiting, just waiting to get you. Many have entered his dreary domain, but not even one has been heard from again. They no doubt made a feast for the butchering beast, and he's waiting, just waiting to get you. In that sulfurous, sunless, and sinister place, he'll crumple your bones in his boogie embrace. Never, never go near if you hold your life dear. For oh, what he'll do when he gets you. Yes, it is a Halloween edition of Speaking of Strange, and I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. It's the perfect time of year to go to Pinhead's graveyard, and it's the perfect time of year to go on a haunted Asheville ghost tour. Walking tours, trolley tours, go to hauntedasheville.com. These were the ones created by me, and you'll see why they have been around for so long. You know, in this area, we often talk about all the ghosts and spooky things that are reaching a peak around October, around Halloween. But I mentioned earlier in the program that I just recently was listening to Coast AM, and Peter Davenport of the National UFO Reporting Center was saying that the UFO sightings in North Carolina are peaking out right now. People are seeing these big orange balls of light streaking through the sky, and apparently, you know, we are entering what looks like maybe another flap of some sort. And of course, the man who really keeps track of this kind of thing for our program is the infamous Mr. Mobius. Welcome to the program, Mr. Mobius.
It's good to be here. Happy Halloween.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's almost Halloween. We have one more show before Halloween of this year, and then it's on to the jolly things, the ho-ho-hos, the Krampus. So, Mobius, have you been seeing all these reports about the UFO activity that's starting to peak up again?
Oh, yeah. They're just off the charts. And when I say that, I don't delegate any one area. I mean the whole world. But yeah, Peter's right. North Carolina's off the charts with these orange glowing balls.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be easy to say that these are meteors. You know, we're having meteors and giant fireballs coming down everywhere, you know, bizarre amounts of objects falling from the sky. But lo and behold, I have an update for you.
Okay.
Some of the videos that are showing up, people are seeing these objects, and as they fall, they do course changes. And you see maybe just a sudden 90-degree shift, or I've even seen one where it looks like it kind of flattens out and then shoots back up. And I don't have the advantage of having the original video to fully authenticate it, but some of these just look very genuine, and it's odd. So yeah, I would say we do have kind of a UFO flap going on.
Well, you know, you and I were having a discussion recently about the nature of the paranormal, starting with UFOs, and of course, several years ago, I was a speaker at the UFO Congress out in Laughlin, Nevada. Forrest, you were there.
Right.
And I gave a presentation saying that basically we need to take a new approach to ufology. And a lot of people, frankly, did not like what I had to say. In fact, a lot of the folks there were older people who were kind of entrenched in the classic UFO establishment. But I was essentially saying that we have been, unfortunately, kind of doing the same thing over and over, decade after decade, trying to look for what you might consider a nuts and bolts explanation for these visitors that are coming from elsewhere. But the more we learn about the world and science, the less likely it seems that these are beings that are just traveling here from another rock. And I know that you feel very strongly the same way, don't you, Mobius?
I do. The Newtonian explanations for UFOs, these little metal objects that use some type of fuel and jump across the universe at very high speeds, just don't make sense. It's not logical. They just don't quantify that. It's something more mystical or quantum. And this is where you and I agree.
And of course, when you start looking at fake UFOs, as we did for years with our UFO experience, in which we invited the very best hobbyists and model makers and engineers from really all over the country, anybody who wanted to show up, to create a fake UFO and put it up into the sky, they did some really impressive jobs. And yet nobody ever created anything that equals these spectacular UFOs that are seen all the time, including ones that I have seen myself. And I don't think that we can look at a physical explanation or a hoaxing explanation for most of these. And what I find even weirder is that, you know how I'm fond of that quote by Charles Fort that you can measure a circle beginning anywhere? It seems like the deeper you dig into UFOs and ghosts and psychic phenomena, the more you see a common component. And what is that common component, Mobius?
Oh, we always find these orbs, these energetic glowing balls of light.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we're not, when we say orbs, we are not talking about, well, I make a little joke when I do some of my tours, if it's all adults. I say most of the time when somebody gives me a picture that shows what they call orbs, it either has dust or insects or moisture or the topless rally was in town. Waka waka, right? I'm weeding all that stuff out. We've seen that stuff a million times. What we are talking about are these large, bright, energetic balls of light that are similar to some of those that have been captured, like in the basement of Zealandia. In fact, anybody listening, if you have internet access, you can go to joshuapwarren.com and click on the section called World's Wildest Ghost Photos, and you can see some examples of some of these big balls of light that are bouncing around. And you see that kind of stuff in haunted places, but when you start applying it on a grander scale and you start looking at Brown Mountain and the outdoors and natural phenomena, well, then it goes even bigger, because you can look at what's happening in Hestalen and in Mexico, and some of those videos are at paratemporal.com. We have about a minute before our next break, Mobius. Tell us a bit about some of the videos at paratemporal.com.
We're using third-gen night vision, so we're looking both at infrared and 70,000 times amplification of very, very dim light. So we see many times orbs in the sky that separate into maybe two objects, do 180-degree turns, just bizarre behavior that is not easily explained with any Newtonian physics. So everybody that gets a chance to use night vision, they instantly are just amazed because they're seeing something they can't explain.
Okay, so we'll pause there. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what this may mean. Okay, when we have this phenomenon of these bright, energetic balls of light that seem to be appearing when there are UFOs, when there are ghosts, when there is psychic activity, even when there are cryptids around, what is that actually telling us about the new way that we should view the common denominator between all of these paranormal phenomena. I'm Joshua P. Warren. We'll dig into that and a lot more when we come back here on Speaking of Strange. Crone with brittle bones and desiccated limbs, to evil eyes with warts and styes and bags about the rims, a dangling nose, 10 twisted toes and folds of shriveled skin, cracked and chipped and crackled lips that frame a toothless grin. She hurtles by, she sweeps the sky and hurls a piercing screech. As she swoops past, a spell is cast on all her curses' reach. Take care to hide when the wild witch rides to shriek her evil spell. What she may do with a word or two is much too grim to tell. It's a Halloween edition of Speaking of Strange. And the Halloween edition is coming up next week on the program, October 26th. Welcome back to the show. I'm talking right now with Mr. Mobius. And, you know, before the break, we were digging into this, well, common denominator. The clue that we can latch on to, that keeps showing up again and again related to paranormal phenomena. I mean, when you have UFOs, there are these large, energetic balls of light that are often seen zipping around and seen interactive, and some even seem conscious. Same thing at Brown Mountain, where the Brown Mountain lights appear. I remember we were doing a conference at the Grove Park Inn many years ago, and Grandmaster Tom Cameron was building up his bioenergy to do a big demonstration, and somebody took a picture of him, and he had a big ball of light around his head. It looked almost like a halo. You go to a haunted place like the basement of Zealandia up near Helen's Bridge here in Asheville, and Brian Irish was down there with me while we were filming and captured this big ball of light bouncing down the hallway that sort of swoops by the camera and then passes through a wall. You have, as crazy as it sounds, even reports of creatures like the fire monkey, in which a cryptid, a weird little monster, is seen within some type of a bright orangish or reddish ball of light. I go down to Puerto Rico, where I have the Bermuda Triangle Research Base, and people talk about seeing the balls of light. Sometimes they even appear in the bedroom of the person at night and speaks to them, gives a message along the lines of, do not be afraid. Something big is about to happen, but you will be safe. And then it disappears. No matter what this relationship is between us and the other side, it seems to be expressed most clearly, most purely, as these balls of light. And if you go to paratemporal.com, that's P-A-R-A, paratemporal.com, you can see how this is a worldwide global phenomenon when you look at, like, the Hestelum lights. What do you make of all this, Mobius?
You keep bringing up the Hestelum lights, and I definitely want to comment on this. There could have been no one who came at this from a more scientific standpoint, simply trying to understand, as we did, the Brown Mountain lights. Pure research. So many times at night, they were using various imaging devices, and they were using laser pointers to aim these devices to get, you know, of course, the best imaging, thermal imaging, night vision, to try to understand what they were dealing with. And by sheer accident, one of the scientists flicked one of the laser pointers, and these weird energies that are present there kind of flickered back. And, you know, that was sort of dismissed at first, but somebody said, wow, wasn't that strange how when you flick the laser, that ball of energy kind of flicked back at you? And the scientists were like, yeah, but, you know, that was just a coincidence. So during another observation, they did exactly, but in this time intentionally, the same thing. They flicked the laser a few times, and the lights over the gorge flickered back. Now, this became more and more complex, and I don't think very many people know about this, but they actually established very basic communications with a ball of light. So much so that the scientists went before the Vatican Council and deemed them intelligent lights. They thought they were some type of energetic intelligence, alien intelligence to us. And I think that is mind-blowing that scientists were willing to do this. I mean, you talk about something that must be hard when you go back into the mainstream circles after you've done that. And yet they got, what, $700,000 of funding to study these lights. So it's just an amazing story. And consciousness is the thing they felt that they were detecting within these anomalies. So that's pretty cool, huh?
Well, absolutely. And it also reminds me of, even going back to the 1960s, the story of Ralph Lell, up at Brown Mountain. You know, he was the guy who claimed that he was constantly being abducted, if you want to call it that, because he was volunteering to go. And Ralph Lell said that it all began by him studying the lights and learning to communicate with them, whether that be using the flashing technique or eventually just telepathy. He said that the lights themselves were conscious entities and that they guided him into the mountain, and that is where his journey began. And, of course, those who go on one of our Haunted Asheville ghost tours gets to go into the Asheville Mystery Museum and actually see a replica of a little mummified alien body that Ralph Lell used to put on display. Nobody knows where the original is anymore, but it was the product, he claimed, of having this communication. So what it tends to boil down to here is that throughout the years, we have been looking at the byproducts of this interdimensional intelligent force that is most basically and purely seen as a ball of light. Now, it may be that one person could look at that ball of light and it would appear different than it does to another person. And there are many cases like that where the individual sees the ball of light differently, that the camera might capture a ball of light, but the individuals present perceive it in their own unique way. Right, Mobius?
That is correct. There are examples where two people took images of a flying saucer or energetic ball at the same moment, and their images were not the same. They became totally two different craft. And more so, the perceptions of the people were different. And when they compared their images, trying to figure why they saw two different things, their images both matched their perception of what they were seeing. And that is where we leak past the realm of Newtonian. We head toward interdimensional, and we get into the quantum realm. And things start to only make sense when we start to look at things the way science is suddenly saying that we would have called magic a few years ago. Now becomes potentially very solid and understandable science.
Well, you sent me a link that I watched recently to a video of one of the TED Talks where I guess it was the physicist who was able to create a quantum effect on the everyday macroscopic level, presented his ideas and his explanation for how he did this, and stated very flatly his belief that the logical and intuitive side of him leads him to believe that the weirdness that we see at the quantum level should certainly be capable of occurring at this level that is the everyday interactive level between us and all the objects around us. So if we have some other type of intelligence that's popping in and out that is seen, at very least, as a ball of light, and we ask ourselves, what is the purpose of this? What is the meaning? What is the message? It doesn't matter if you look back 100 years ago or 50 years ago or if you look at today. It doesn't matter if you're talking to psychics and spiritualists or you're talking to contactees. The message tends to be somewhat the same. And that message is, humans are about to go through some type of a transition, through an evolution, through an advancement. And some of us are here to help that take place, and some of us are working against it. And so we're going to take another break here before we wrap up this hour. When we come back, Mobius and I will have a conversation about what exactly we can do with this message. How do we take this concept that some of us are here more aware, more awake, more enlightened, and use that to create a society that lives in harmony, or at least more harmony, with the world around us. Fascinating, isn't it? I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where we talk about the unusual, where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. Scientists like Michio Kaku, say that if you look at the big picture, the cosmic picture, the idea is to become a Type 4 civilization. Now, here's what that means. A Type 1 civilization is one that understands how to use all the resources of its planet. A Type 2 to use all the resources of its solar system. A Type 3 to use all the resources of its galaxy. And a Type 4 goes beyond to use the resources of other galaxies and other places in the universe. We humans are not even a Type 1. We're a Type 0 at this point. That's why we're so animalistic and brutal and stupid in our worldwide ways. But we're getting there, little by little. And yet, how do we make that transition? How do we become a better, more harmonious, productive society? It obviously is the goal of any more advanced intelligence that might be here attempting to communicate with us from whatever point of view. And that's what we're talking about this hour on Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Next hour, well, it's going to be the Dark 30 hour when we go from the summit of mankind's enlightenment to the pit of his dark depravity. That hour is not for the kiddies or the easily offended. Right now, I have Mr. Mobius on the line. Mobius, how do you feel about this idea that the message is for us to learn to live in sync with our environment, and what do you think is a good step to do that?
Well, I'm going to tell something, and I'm going to let you finish it, because it was both of our message. There was a night that I had a very vivid, lucid dream. And in this dream, what appeared to be an alien ship that had a very biological shape flew over, turned around, and a green ball of light came down, and in front of me, a biological-looking creature that you and I have made a pact, no one could just imagine. And it gave me a message. I've seen various dreams like this, but this time it was for you. And I listened to the message, and I'm like, no. Joshua, you know, he there's no way that he's going to believe me telling him this. You go tell him. Shortly thereafter, I woke up, and I heard you on the radio. I had slept late that day, and you said I had the weirdest night of my life. I think I was abducted last night, and you began to say things and talk about it, but you gave no genuine details because it was probably too strange. I sent you a text, and I said, I know exactly what you dreamed last night, to which you said, there is no way. And I did know what you dreamed, and I nailed it. We saw and had the same dream and got the same message. Now, I will let you finish this up, because this is where things get weird.
It's true. I had one of those nights when I had an experience that seemed realer than reality. It didn't seem like this world. It didn't seem like a dream. I mean, if I have to call it a dream, okay, I will. But basically, I, in the middle of the night, got up and I walked out my real front door of my house, and I opened the door, and there was standing a creature, a being, and it looked like a big, brilliant Birdman with blue light sort of emanating around him. And the world around was the same real world. It was my real outdoor environment. It was my backyard, but it looked just a little different. And the Birdman, the bird god, really, if you want to call it that, looked amazingly like some kind of an Egyptian figure. And he said, you are going to help bring harmony, but there's going to be a lot of scary change in the meantime. Don't worry. We are helping you. You're working with us. Okay, something to that effect. And it wasn't long after that that, or maybe it was around that time, we started producing the Sunshine Simple solar generators for the home. And that's just step one in creating technologies that help people to live more in harmony with the world around them. And, you know, it's a crazy way to lead up to a commercial, but, you know, sunshinesimple.com is where you can go and you can watch this movie and you can learn about this generator that Mobius and I worked together with our team to create. Is this something inspired by beings from another realm? I'm not sure. Mobius, can you stick around for hour number three tonight?
I will be glad to.
Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll dig into the dark 30 hour. In the meantime, if you've never done it, I implore you, please, go to sunshinesimple.com. Sunshinesimple.com, and we're on a mission now. We have new technology that is coming out later this year that is going to be another little step in helping people live in harmony and take us one little fragment closer to a Type 1 civilization. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.